Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Thank you for the privilege and the honor of your time. I'm Randy Dean, No BS Bishop, and I'm alive to love. I'm asking you to join me in a pursuit, a revolution, a resolution to be alive to love. Cut the BS. Quit lying to yourself. Quit lying to others, even subtly. Just be straightforward with one thing, and that is love. I'll throw this thought in real fast here as it crosses my mind. A lot of people say, I'm going to be a truth teller. No BS with me, but then they forget love. So what I say is, I'm a no BS bishop. I'm cutting the BS. I'm telling you the truth, but the greatest truth of humankind, the greatest truth for everybody listening, everybody on the planet, the greatest truth we need to hear is love. So everything else is potential BS, and I'm diving in with both feet. I'm diving into the deep end of this thing because I've believed for a very long time that if you dive into the shallow end, you're just going to break your neck and crush your skull. Time to dive into the deep end of things, and the deepest end of all of life is the pursuit of love. I'm alive to love. I'm asking you to join with me the next 30 minutes as we discuss this topic that is a revolutionary human concept, and it's a call to be lovers. So here today, I've got a bit of a complex challenge to pass along to you. So trust me, I'll do my best to break it down and to give it to you in sizable chunks so that you can wrap your heart, your mind, and your hands around it. Everything in life needs to be received in context. Everything in life needs to be seen in context. If you can see your fellow traveler in life, your fellow human being, your neighbor, your enemy, in a context, then you're discovering the real beauty of being alive to love. Let me give a definition of that. When a context for somebody, one of my best friends in the world over past, oh my goodness, back all the way to college, and so that's a long time ago for me, is a gentleman by the name of Daniel. Daniel is a fine man of real character and a quality that is unique to him. And Daniel happens to be blind. He was born blind. So his eyes don't work. That's his context. So when I discuss life with Daniel, I have to remember the context of his life. I asked him one time, what the color blue would mean to him. And he defined blue to me in ways I had never even dreamed of thinking, because blue is not in a context for him of some kind of wavelength from his optic nerve to his brain. That optic nerve does not exist in Daniel's body. His context is something altogether different than just what his optic nerve tells his brain. So everything in life for Daniel has to be received in a context that's other than what I know. So if I'll spend the time, if I'll give myself the energy, the determination to understand Daniel's context, then I can have conversations with him that are bigger than my own world. And that's what love looks like. I can't spend my time trying to BS Daniel into seeing my context or coming to terms with my context. That's Daniel's decision. What I have to do is to see life through Daniel's context, and that's how love works. I hope that makes sense. While I'm on the subject of my friend Daniel, I'll tell you something that he said to me one time that changed my life. It helped to rearrange my own context, and that is, I don't remember who it was or where it was, because it isn't important where we were at. And I was introducing Daniel to a group of other friends. And I said, hi, I want you to meet my blind friend, Daniel. And so they all shook his hand and we exchanged pleasantries. And later when Daniel and I were alone, Daniel said to me, he asked if he could introduce a better way of explaining who he was. And I was curious about that. I said, sure, Daniel, what do you mean? He said, when you introduce me, am I your blind friend or am I your friend who happens to be blind? And we had a conversation from there that helped set my context of how that landed in his own mind and heart. I'll tell you, it changed my perspective. It changed my context. I would suggest to you that we all have a need to get our context corrected. So bear with me. I'm going to try it again. Unpack something that's a little more complex than what I usually talk to you about here in these 30 minutes. But I'll do my best to get it to you the way I know how. An American psychologist by the name of Tara Brach says this. Imagine you're walking in the woods and you see a small dog sitting by a tree. As you approach this dog, suddenly the dog lunges out at you. The teeth of that dog are snarling at you. You're frightened and you're even angry. But then you notice that one of the dog's legs is caught in a trap. So immediately your mood is shifting from anger and fear to real compassion and concern. You can see that this dog's aggression is coming from a place of vulnerability and pain. This applies to all of us. When we believe in hurtful ways, when we behave in hurtful ways, it is because we're caught in some kind of trap. The more we look through the eyes of wisdom at ourselves and one another, the more we will cultivate a compassionate heart. And what I believe about that is seeing life and people in context equals love. So the context of this quote is here's a little dog. This little dog looks innocent enough. And then the dog lunges at you in anger. Then you realize this dog is not angry and looking to harm me. This dog is in deep pain. This dog is seeking to protect itself because the dog has no real context of what happened to it. The dog has no real ability to really process the pain in their leg that's caught in a trap and this human being that's coming at it. So the dog is out there to self-protect, self-defend itself, to give itself some self-defense. So that's context. Everybody you meet has a story. So that's the first part I want to talk to you about today. Everybody has a story. And everybody's story is the best story that person knows. They don't know another story. Everybody's story is their story. It's their definition of life. It's how they've framed life's functioning for them. We have to remember that my story is not their story. My story is not the only story on the planet. So when I'm walking through life, I'm defining life through my own context. I see life through my own eyes, through my own lens. When I am viewing others without an awareness of their story, well, then love has been shut off. I'm not operating. I'm not alive to love that person. I'm more than likely just there to BS them into listening to my story rather than being willing to hear that person's story. So when you see people deeply sad, they're deeply some great pathos or depression or some great fear that's got them beaten down and they're unable to function normally, beware of the immediate assumption on your part of assigning to them some kind of shameful, embarrassing sense that, well, they just need to suck it up. They just need to grow up. They just need to get, you know what I'm saying? They just need, and then we have their problem defined through our own context. That's not love. Everybody has a story. What's your story? Learn to tell your story in a way that's accurate. Learn to tell your story to yourself in a way that's honest and accurate. Love yourself by taking your story into your own hands and taking it out of the hands of others who want to tell your story for you. Remember that. A lot of people want to tell you what your story really is, and the truth is nobody knows your story like you, so tell your story accurately and tell the painful parts. Don't be afraid of the painful parts of your own story, and make sure that in your story you're being compassionate with yourself, you're being patient with yourself, and then make sure that out of your own story you're able to frame a way of loving others through your own story. I hope that makes some sense. Again, all of us have a story. And every one of us needs to remember, my story is not the only one. I want to hear your story. I want to know how you grew up. I want to know how you processed life to choose a career, how you chose a significant other in your life, how you came to believe the things that you believe in. I'm a person of faith. I'm a no BS bishop. That means I am a bishop. I'm a man of faith. I'm a man of great passion and commitment to spirituality in Jesus Christ. But I also know there's a whole lot of people in this whole wide world that don't agree with me about that. In fact, they would even violently disagree with me. And I need to remember that when I'm encountering people of that notion, that it's important that I remember they have a story. And their story is valuable. I don't have the only story. If I'm going to be of any purpose to love that person that doesn't believe the way I do, then I've got to be willing to know their story. A lot of Christian folks that I am familiar with will often thump their chest and thump their Bible and say, we got to tell the truth in love. And I, because when I preach about love, people get a little nervous, like I'm going to be overly accepting. I'm going to be overly friendly with people that don't believe like me. Well, the truth is I'm going to be overly friendly and I'm going to be overly loving and accepting. But then there are some who listen to me and say, well, you know, but we have to tell the truth in love. And that is a Bible verse, and it is a valid concern. But let's talk about that for just 1 minute. If I love somebody, the truth that I speak isn't carried in some kind of shameful, diminishing way toward that person. If I'm speaking truth, I've got to remember the context of that person's life and love them enough with truth that my truth isn't overbearing, that my truth isn't offered up in some kind of clobbering you in the head and beating you up and cornering you like the little dog in the story that I read to you a minute ago. My truth is offered in a loving way, and it's offered for you to consider as a part of your story, not to be put in some kind of compulsion. You got to believe the way I believe. That's not truth and love. That's just beating people up with Bible verses. Cut the BS. Love people. Love them where they're at, not where you want them to be immediately. So to tell the truth in love means I'm going to take time. I'm going to learn the context of the stories of the people who are around me. So remember that. Life in context equals love. Everybody has a story. Next thing I want to talk to you about is how to practice radical compassion. Practicing radical compassion. I'm a believer in knowing how to assimilate the story of a person and recognize that there's a whole lot of everybody's story that requires my compassion. There are some obvious things. You know, if going back to my story about Daniel, I could have defended myself and said, oh, I didn't mean to introduce you as my blind friend, or I could act in radical compassion and recognize that I just introduced him in a way that was confining to him. Compassion means I'm willing to be empathetic. I'm willing to see life again through his own perspective. And to practice radical compassion means I'm going to take my own definitions, my own way of having to define who you are, what I am, and all of that. And I'm going to be willing to shelve it long enough to pay attention. Radical compassion. Radical compassion also means that if somebody's in a jam, somebody's in a terrible, terrible corner, then I'm not going to immediately assume they deserve it. My wife and I recently heard a sermon series on the book of Job. What a life-changing comparison that was for us. The very first part of Job, which, you know, I've been reading Job for a very long time, and I just did not really catch that early in the book of Job, it says that Job was a blameless man. There was nothing in Job's life that could be held to blame against him. And yet, when Job's life kind of went sideways on him, things started turning bad on him. He had comforters who showed up in his life who began to assume that Job had it coming, that Job had all this misery coming on him. And they, you know, the book of Job is about the comforters of Job trying to convince Job that he was to blame for his misery. But the truth of the book of Job is he was a blameless man and bad things happened to him. So compassion for Job would have rather looked like people, rather than assuming he had bad things coming to him, rather than assuming that he was a bad guy getting a bad break, we need to be called to something other than that and be a radical person of radical compassion, to show up without determined to tell you why you have it coming the way you got it coming. Radical compassion means that even if I don't like your explanation of why you're in a jam, I'm still there. I'm still there to to pay attention and to give you the opportunity to be loved out of the corner in. Radical compassion also means that what I have received in life as a point of reference for forgiveness, everybody deserves the same forgiveness, the same love, the same mercy that I've gotten. Everybody deserves it. When you say somebody's got something bad coming to them, they earned it. Well, then you just said that about yourself, and nobody wants to live like that for themselves. You don't look in the mirror and say, well, you got it coming, boy. You got it coming, girl. No, we don't want that, and neither should we want it for other people. So, first of all, everybody has a story. My story's not the only one. I need to learn how to listen to the story of other people and to put in context their life through their story. The second way to keep life in context and to be a lover of others and to be alive to love is to practice radical compassion. And third, last but not least here, and this one is one of my favorite concepts of life, and that is learn how to live your life as a sanctuary. The word sanctuary has been on my radar a lot lately. As the new year 2020 has come on the scene, I've been considering how to produce and to make available a life of sanctuary. You know, sanctuary is a rather large term in a very concrete form. Sanctuary can be a beautiful church building, a beautiful chapel. It can be a beautiful edifice. You know, there are so many places in the world that I have deeply, deeply fond memories of. Holy Hill in Milwaukee is one of those places. Such a gorgeous sanctuary, a cathedral with a prayer chapel where there are wheelchairs and crutches and canes and other medical instruments that have been left behind in that place because people came to that sanctuary and their bodies were radically healed. It's amazing. It is beyond description when you stand in that chapel and see all the wheelchairs and such that are hanging on the walls because people came there and walked away without their need for a wheelchair or other assistance because the sanctuary of love, the sanctuary of God was there. So that's a concrete form of sanctuary. But I want to talk to you about the more ethereal, the transcendent sanctuary that each of us can become. To become a sanctuary means that I'm carrying with me and in my life I'm carrying an atmosphere. I'm carrying a culture. You know, culture comes from the term a cult. In a bad way, a cult is developed because a whole bunch of people are kept separated from the world around them, and they're pumped full of all kinds of misleading BS truths. But to be acculturated, you know, like in laboratories, in a medical setting, to have a culture of germs or to have a culture of cells is to set it apart so that it has an opportunity to develop into something that a medical research scientist can look at and study. So culture means something that I've intentionally put into a purpose so that it is growing. It's a growing quality in my life. I believe that every one of us needs to develop the mentality that my life is a sanctuary. I believe we can each one develop a personal culture of being a safe place for people to listen, to be heard, to be a culture of and a transcendent presence of sanctuary means what you are with me is safe with me. I'm not going to go blab how great a person I am because I loved you. I'm going to talk to you as if you're the only person on the earth. And after we're done talking, what you have said to me stays with me. So you're safe with me. That's what sanctuary means. I want to be a person where when people have left my presence, they can say, you know, something about that Randy Dean leaves me feeling better after we've been together than what I was before we were together. That's being a sanctuary. Seeing life in context means I'm a loving person. And to see life in context means I'm going to create a context of my own life that I am a safe place to be. Now, hear me. I've not always successfully practiced this. In fact, to my own disappointment, I've created other than a sanctuary for people in my life. And I'm always disappointed in the influence that I have left when I've done that. I truly believe that every one of us needs to own the negative side of this and own the fact that, you know what, I left people feeling worse. You know, I was negative. I was angry. My context of my life was wrapped up in my own selfishness, my own pain, and I created something other than a sanctuary, a safe place. So what every one of us can do, however, is to recognize that each and every day, I should develop the sanctuary of my heart and life. So if I was the architect of, say, Holy Hill in Milwaukee, if I was that architect, well, I would sit down with a drawing and a computer, computer-aided drafting, and I would develop the colors and the space and the dimensions of that sanctuary. Same is true. I think it was a few weeks ago I talked to you about designing your life around love, dreaming your way toward love. That's what I'm talking about here. Make sure that you've had some purpose, some plan in mind about developing your life as a sanctuary. So part of what that means is we need to be very, very choosy about the input into our life. So if I'm always pumping my head full of certain news sources and it leaves me feeling blue and miserable, then I need to limit that news source in my life. If I'm always reading certain material, whether it's online or in a newspaper or magazine, and it just leaves me worse than what I was before I came to it, then I need to limit the input of that in my life. I've found that when I'm driving, and I do a fair amount of that, I make sure that what I'm listening to on the radio or a podcast or an audiobook, that is something that is lifting me up, that is building me up, because it's not just about my own needs to feel better. It's about the fact that I want to be a sanctuary for people around me. Oh my goodness. I keep thinking of this, and I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. Many years ago, there was a song, a little chorus that we sang in a church I was at, that Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, tried and true. That's a little song that maybe you ought to learn, and maybe you can put it in your own context of your own tune. Prepare me to be a sanctuary. Let it be on earth as it is in heaven, wherever I am, wherever I speak, wherever I show up, whether it's a gas station or an office setting or a factory or a restaurant, wherever I am, let my life be the sanctuary from the pressures and the miseries of life. Because remember, everybody has a context. And some, like that dog that I started the story with, are caught in a trap. And the pain, whether it's physical or psychological, the pain is causing people to react in ways that we better pay attention to the context of why they react the way they do. And if we see that context, and we practice radical compassion, that's my second point of today, and we practice radical compassion. I don't blame that little dog for getting caught in that trap. I'm going to find a way to help that little dog out of that trap. I don't blame another human being for being trapped or caught in their pain. I'm going to be there to help them pull out of that pain that has got them cornered and making them react in ways that's not healthy for them or others. And so then my life becomes a sanctuary. Boy, I tell you, I've been giving you a handful, and I hope you've followed through with me on this, that everybody has a story. We should practice radical compassion as we consider the context of everybody's story. And then we are determined to be a sanctuary for the people around us. That when you get with me, what you say to me, what you are with me is safe with me. I'm not gonna tell your story to the wide world so that other people have a chance to be condemning or shaming or judging of you. I'm going to hold your story in a treasured place with me. I'm going to treat you like I was that sanctuary in Holy Hill, where when you walk in, you can come in any way you are and what you are is safe with me, because I'm just going to relieve you of your burdens as you just kneel and meditate in the process of being caught in the love that's in my little circle of influence. One of my favorite authors is Brennan Manning. He speaks of being seized by the power of a great affection. I love that phrase. It really captivates for me what I am trying to communicate with you all about being alive to love. Brennan Manning says that there was a time in American history when rather than using really hard formulas for how people came to faith, that there used to be a time people would talk about in the Deep South about being seized by the power of a great affection. You know, I can't help but think about the God of love being that great affection. And then he's only, you know, his eyes are pressing up against the window of our souls, looking in and saying, oh, my precious little one, I can see the pain of the trap that's wrapped around your leg, around your heart. I want to practice radical compassion and give you a way out of that. That's what God is. He's the carrier of a great affection. And it's aimed at us every single day, because he knows everybody has a story and he wants to change that story for the better. He knows that radical compassion is the way out of all of our pain. And God himself is our ultimate transcendent sanctuary. And he invites each one of us to become a sanctuary. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true. That's the goal of my heart and life, and my purpose in sharing with you today as the No BS Bishop. Let's cut the BS. Let's head for the one goal of life that really matters, and that is let's be alive to love. No other values really, really have the power to change the world around us. Well, in these last few minutes, I want to do what I've been doing here for several weeks, and that is I'm inviting you to take a deep breath. Just draw a breath right now, deep in your lungs. And then exhale with just the calm assurance that you're safe right in this moment, no matter what else is going on yesterday or what.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.